Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Chris Reisner. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Hashi Bai.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Hashi. And today, our special guest is Ryan Cracker. Ryan, what are you here to talk to us about today?
So I'm here to talk about everything that we've done in Azure Document DB since I was last on the show, which was early April, I think.
Fantastic. And before we jump over to Ryan talking about DocDB, we're going to go through a little bit of news. So first thing we'll talk about is that we've just announced that we now have boot diagnostics for virtual machines. So now you're able to actually see the console output in the portal for a VM booting up, as well as basically make it take screenshots. So if you're running into any issues booting up VMs, that's a great way to be able to debug it. Yeah, absolutely. So the second thing, we've got some new preview SDKs for the Azure Resource Manager. Specifically, these are for Java, Python, Go, and Ruby SDKs. What's really cool about these, aside from the fact that we've got previews of them, is that they were actually all generated using an open source project called AutoRest. So that's kind of a really cool way of generating the SDKs here. That's really powerful. Yeah. And that basically, it makes it so that if we add new features, it makes it really easy to add those to all the SDKs at once. So next thing, there's been a mandatory update for the Azure Backup Agent in order to fix some potential crashing-related issues. If you're using the Azure Backup Agent, you want to update immediately or right away because this is going to actually make things work much, much better. And then the last bit of news is we just announced some new SQL database capabilities specific to Elastic Database Pools. So if you're building an application where you want to have a different database per customer, for example, this makes it really easy to do and really quite capable. Included in that is some new tiering for Elastic databases, as well as some introduction of some new higher-end scale options for SQL databases. So some really great news here for anybody that's out there building big applications using Azure SQL Database. So we're going to go ahead and switch over to Ryan now. All right, we're back. All right, Ryan, tell us about DocumentDB.
Cool. So thanks, Chris. Thanks, guys. It's good to be back on Cloud Cover.
Happy to have you again.
It's been a really, really long time, and it feels like a lifetime, but that's because we've been super busy.
Yes, you have.
Making DocumentDB even better.
We've actually been trying to get Ryan back on the show for months now, but it kept being, no, we've got these new features coming. No, we've got these new features. So I'm happy we found a point that's in time where, you have 10 minutes without releasing a new feature.
Well, that's it. So, I've asked the team back in the office to please hold out for releasing features for 10 minutes so that we can kind of catch up.
Perfect.
But then, we will release again like crazy.
Awesome.
So it's been really fun. Just kind of a quick little lightning round in case viewers aren't all familiar with DocumentDB.
Excellent.
So a quick little lightning round. A lot of people ask me what is a document database, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm used to inserting rows into tables.
Absolutely.
What's this thing called a document database and what do I put in it? So document databases are a NoSQL kind of database. You get graph, you get column, you get document databases, right? And you get key value stores. So we're a document database. And by document, we mean a JSON document.
Okay.
Right? So it's something that looks like this.
Right.
Okay. It is a hierarchical kind of JSON document.
And this is standardized JSON. There's nothing funny going on here.
So we've made sure when we build Azure DocumentDB that we stick to JSON, right? We haven't invented our own kind of data type subsystem. We haven't gone and invented new data types. Mm-hmm. We haven't built something proprietary. We're just using JSON, right?
Great.
So we stick to the standard JSON. So this is JSON as well, if you look at it, right?
Yes.
It's got curly braces, it's got colons, it's got commas. It's JSON, right?
Absolutely.
So can I take that and stick it in DocumentDB? Well, the short answer is yes, you can.
Great.
Okay. However, that kind of document, probably represents paragraphs in a book or, really lengthy kind of content, and would you stick that in a document database? I could, but, I'm probably going to want to start doing some sort of full text indexing on that or full text searching on that. And while we can do that, right, we're probably not the optimal service for that.
Oh, okay.
There are other things like Azure Search, for instance, that do a really good job of indexing and allowing you to search documents that look like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So potentially, yes, it'll work with us, right? So if you've got some large blocks of paragraphs and text and that kind of stuff, sure, you can keep them in your JSON.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what your document looks like, it might not be the best place for it.
But for the JSON document, we don't reinforce any specific schema. Right?
No, not at all.
Just any JSON document.
Yeah, okay. So any JSON document, as long as it's valid JSON, we'll take it, we'll store it, and you'll see in a little bit, we index every property in that document for you by default.
Okay.
And then lastly, but kind of not least, what is a document database? Well, it's probably what is a document database not. It's definitely not a database to put in Word documents and PDF documents and Excel.
It's not on my folder on my desktop with documents.
It's not a good place to index your documents and kind of have the contents of that document indexed and queryable.
Okay.
Again, you know, Azure Search is probably better for that, or something like SharePoint is better for that. Right?
Okay.
It's not this kind of document. It's those JSON kind of documents.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, and a lot of people say to me, well, I've been building in SQL for so many years. Why has document databases become so kind of popular, right?
Sure.
And if you look at them, if you go to DB Engine ranking, and you'll see all the JSON document databases, they're climbing the rankings very, very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fourth most popular database in the world is now a document database. Right?
Okay.
And these are some of the kind of reasons why. But basically, they're developer friendly. Right, they allow you as a developer to go in, start building your application. You don't have to think about these, complex data models and do these massive ERD kind of diagrams. And you start building your application. And as your application evolves, your data revolves with your application, and it's really quick and it's really easy and it's schema agnostic, and you just kind of work.
And that's like one of the things we've kind of worked on for a little while with code first development and stuff like that. You know, making it easier to actually build an application and not worry about the underpinnings.
Yeah,
which is kind of what the cloud does overall, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the big things that developers love about JSON databases is this notion of getting rid of impedance mismatch. And what we mean by that is the way you store something in your database is different to the way the application uses it,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you usually have these complicated ORM kind of layers in the middle that map what your application talks about, the objects your application talks about, to the way you store it in the database. And you have this kind of complex mapping layer in between. And you spend a lot of your time in that kind of complex mapping layer plumbing, figuring out what the mapping looks like and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With these JSON document databases, you don't do that. You take your model, serialize it to JSON, and stick it in your database.
Right? Okay.
And you retrieve it out of JSON, deserialize it back into your model, and work with it.
Now, NoSQL is not an area that I am, an expert at, for example. But I, from my understanding, one of the potential pieces of guidance that people might get when they're using NoSQL is that because you don't necessarily have all the relational querying, mm-hmm. it's often better to store data, in repeat, so that you don't have to try and jump from one piece of data to a connection to another piece. How does that work when it comes to something like DocumentDB? Yeah.
So that brings up a good point. The approaches between a relational database and a document database differ. Right. And you're going to get the most value out of a document database when you start thinking about them as a document database, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just taking what you've been doing in a relational database and just creating a JSON version of your tables, right?
Right.
So to illustrate the kind of concept, if you are building an application that deals with a motor vehicle, for instance, mm-hmm. right? In a relational world, you'd probably do something that looked like that.
Yep.
Okay. And that's what you were talking about. You kind of take your entity and you break it down into, parts,
mm-hmm.
and you store each of these parts individually.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then when your application kind of wants to work with a car, it then runs these very complex, very costly, very expensive, join statements to kind of reassemble all of these parts back into something your application can work with.
Absolutely.
Right. But that's what we've been doing with normalization for the last 20 years,
yes.
30 years. That's how we've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first kind of thing when people come to document databases is it's very tempting to just take that data model and migrate it across into JSON and start working with it.
Sure.
Right. And for the large part, it'll work. It'll get you going, but you'll start running into some trouble, later down. So when you're working with a document database, think of it more like this, right?
Okay, so basically the JSON document is the car.
The JSON document is the car,
right.
Exactly. And when your application is working with that car, it's working with the car. It's not working with, a subset of a whole bunch of different things and then reassembling it into a car and then breaking it down and storing each piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's working with the car. So it persists the car to the database, it retrieves the car from the database and works with it. And that's a very simplistic kind of view of the world, but that's a good rule of thumb to kind of start getting you thinking in the database, document database world.
Great.
So denormalize versus normalizing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then Azure Document DB. So this is my one kind of slide summary of how Azure Document DB differs from the other NoSQL document databases out there. When we started building this thing, we sat down and said, well, we don't just want to be another document database. We want to be the best document database. We want to be the differentiated document database,
mm-hmm.
right? And there were a couple of things that have guided us. And then first and foremost is this ability to do query over schema-free JSON.
Right.
And not be able to, and not paint yourself into kind of some indexing path and indexing scheme that you've set up and then never be able to kind of change that or make it very, very difficult to change that.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the other document databases, they allow you to persist JSON, right? Any format you like, any kind of schema, or it doesn't matter what the schema is because the database doesn't enforce it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So you can persist whatever you like. But then when you want to query against that, you have to then go define your index paths. And you're now kind of sort of inferring a schema because I'm telling the database what my documents look like,
right?
In order for me to be able to query them. Now, if my documents suddenly change, the database doesn't know about that, and you have to go in and kind of change your index paths and tell it about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we said, well, that kind of only gets you half of this notion of schema-free capability. You've still got to do a lot of work.
Right.
So we've done a lot of work with our indexing layer to do a lot more of that default stuff for you, right? So you don't have to think about it. You just create the document, we index everything for you, and you can, without defining an index box, go in and query, do fast, efficient, reliable, predictable kind of queries using our index.
Fantastic.
We give you the ability, because we realize that everybody's workload and application and patterns are different. So we give you, while we do the default, we give you the ability to go in and tweak and change and customize if you need to.
Right, and I think in the previous episode, you talked kind of a little bit more at length about some of those different options.
Yeah.
So, you know, to save you time from going over that all over again, we'll make sure we link to that other video beneath this as well.
Yeah, we'll take a quick look at it later, because in the demos, I will actually go and show you briefly some of that stuff.
Okay, great.
Cool.
The other one that we wanted to do is kind of, you know, we're a JSON database.
Mm-hmm.
JSON works so well with JavaScript, with Node, that kind of stuff. And we wanted to really kind of marry that JavaScript, you know, and really get the benefit out of JavaScript. So we actually have JavaScript processing in our server-side engine. So you can build stored procedures, triggers, user-defined functions, that kind of stuff. And you actually build them in JavaScript. Right.
Great.
So you write JavaScript code and you persist them on the server as a function and you can actually call them and use them.
Okay.
And the nice thing that allows us to do is that gives us the ability to do multi-document kind of transactions. So a lot of NoSQL document databases, they don't have this notion of a ACID transaction across multiple individual documents. It's
mm-hmm.
work with one document as a transaction.
Okay.
But as soon as you wanted to do update this document and update that document, they happen isolated and you can't do them in a transaction.
Okay.
And we've said, nah, you know, ACID transactions across documents are really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the ability to do multi-doc document transactions using these JavaScript sort processes.
Awesome. Okay.
You mentioned triggers. Can you give us some examples? What kind of triggers you can define?
Triggers, think of triggers exactly like you would think of a SQL trigger. So you've got a pre and a post trigger, and you can define a pre-trigger runs before the document gets created, so if you want to potentially do some server-side validation of the document before you persist it,
mm-hmm.
you can do that. You've got a post-trigger that runs after the document is kind of created,
mm-hmm.
Or updated, or deleted, or whatever the case may be, so you can do some post-validation. And those things run in a transaction again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the post-trigger, if the document is persisted and then you throw an exception in your post-trigger,
mm-hmm.
we roll back the persisting of the document.
Okay.
And that's done inside of a transaction.
Makes sense. So for the triggers, can it define some trigger to be triggered on a specific property of my document?
No, so you define the trigger.
It's at the object,
it's at the document level. But then inside of the trigger,
mm-hmm.
You can have multiple triggers. And then inside of the trigger, you can actually then write the logic
that goes and looks
for a particular property.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
So,
okay.
And then the other thing that we really wanted to kind of do was we differentiate ourselves on the fact that we're built as a cloud service from the ground up, right? So we're not a product that was shipped in a box that was kind of designed to run on one or two VMs that we're running as a service on mm-hmm. behalf of customers.
Right.
This thing is built from the ground up as a distributed kind of cloud service. It's reliable, it's highly redundant, it's distributed. And that's the architecture. And that gives us the ability to kind of have super high performance. It's very easy for you to kind of tune and scale. So
mm-hmm.
you can go up in tiny increments, come down in tiny increments, get billed in hourly kind of increments. You know, rather than, you know, stepping up in these large blocks as your provider provides you a bigger and a bigger and a bigger VM under the covers.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we built it and designed it from the ground up to be a cloud app. So let's take a quick look at timeline, because everyone wants to know, hey, what have I been doing? I haven't just been kind of designing cool t-shirts. I've actually, you know, the team's actually been really busy. So between public preview, which was August, and GA, which was April of this year, mm-hmm. you know, we've just been rolling out lots and lots and lots of foundational kind of things, right? Yeah. To make sure the thing's stable, it's reliable, it's really quick. We've been optimizing the storage engine. We've been optimizing the querying engine and the indexing layer. So that was kind of all sorts of, you know, to potentially to customers looking at it, boring updates, right? Because it's nothing they've been really seeing. And,
right.
and people are kind of going, well, what have you guys been doing? You know, we've been asking for this feature for months and it's not there.
Sure.
But it's because we've been getting that kind of foundation in place, right? And then since GA to today, what have we been doing? So take a look at some of the kinds of things quickly and I'll show you a demo of some of these. So we'll just talk through some of these things first. So everything in DocumentDB is it's a REST service, right? And you can address every resource in DocumentDB through a REST kind of URI.
Mm-hmm.
There are two properties. If you've worked with DocumentDB, you'll know. The one is an ID that you give when you create the record. And right. the other one is this hashed system-generated ID, a resource ID,
okay.
that we use internally for routing.
Okay.
Right? Now, the problem was, as you'll see in the demo, those resource IDs weren't very friendly to work with.
Okay.
And they were actually quite difficult to work with, and you needed to do a few extra queries in order to be able to get the resource ID because you didn't know what the resource ID was because
sure.
nobody remembers a hashed kind of key. So we've done a lot of work, and we now have a new way of, or an alternative way of routing. And you can actually now use the IDs that you give when you create the resource
mm-hmm.
to do that routing.
Perfect.
And we'll take a look at that. The other one is we now have range operations on strings. So I can order by strings. I can do where a string is greater than A, string is less than B, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
String starts with A, B, C.
Okay.
String contains, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's right. In the query language.
In the query language.
Yeah.
But specifically, it's in the query language, but it's in the indexing layer as well, right? So we don't release something in the query language, but then not have it supported in the index layer. So we go and do the work in the index layer to make sure that we can support ranges on strings, and then we'll kind of enhance the query language, and then we enhance the SDKs, and we kind of ship a feature.
Okay.
Sort of what we do.
Great.
The biggest one that people between, you know, shortly after GA have been moaning about was AutoBuy. So mm-hmm. we now have AutoBuy. As long as you've got that index policy, and we'll talk about that later, you can actually now go and AutoBuy your columns, which
awesome.
Is super cool. The biggest one is this notion of index transform, right? So yes, I said, remember that you could, that we by default will index everything for you.
Yep.
But we give you the ability to go and tweak and change and customize that.
Right.
Up until a few weeks ago, you had to know that when you created the collection before you put the data in. Okay? And if you wanted to tweak and change that, you had to go and create a new collection because the index policy was specified at the time you created the collection.
Okay.
Well, that's a little bit lame if I've got 10 gig of data sitting in a collection.
It's a little complicated.
And then I realize that, yeah, I want to tweak the indexing policy slightly. Damn, I have to create a new collection and copy all the data from this one into
yep.
that one. Not a great experience.
No.
So we now have the ability to transform these things on the fly. So
excellent.
You don't have to take your database offline, you don't have to stop your customers from using it, your queries just keep working, inserts just keep happening, and we transform the index in the background and we'll basically effectively re-index that collection.
Fantastic.
So depending on the size of the data in the collection, it may take a couple of seconds. Depending on what's happening on the database, it may take a couple of seconds for that transform to happen. But it happens online and you can just keep using your application while that happens.
Great.
Okay, yeah, that was my question.
Yeah. Okay. One of the other ones, we've been enhancing our query kind of syntax a lot. So we now support things like in, between, starts with, contains, a whole bunch of math functions, string functions like substring, left, trim, you know, all of those kinds of things.
Okay.
So we now support all of those.
Great.
So we're becoming we were already a very rich kind of query language for a document database, but
mm-hmm.
we're getting richer and richer and richer as we go.
Portal
updates. You know, I think when you first had me on the show, the only thing you could do in the portal was kind of like, you know, create an account.
Yeah, it was very minimal as what you could do there, for sure.
You could create an account and then everything was in code, right?
Yes.
And it's
yes.
like, well, that wasn't a great experience. So we've been doing a ton of work in the portal.
Awesome.
And I'll show you what the new portal looks like.
Perfect.
We've also built a data migration tool, you know, because you may have an app that's running on some other platform, some other database, and you want to move that data into DocumentDB.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Sure. Right?
And I'll show you what that data migration tool looks like in a bit as well.
Awesome.
You can also export data out of DocumentDB.
Ah,
so if you want to take your JSON data out, Go for it, run the export tool, go do that. We hope you don't ever want to take your documents out and move them somewhere else, but potentially you want to kind of take them out to keep a backup copy of them offsite.
And I think that's a really great feature, because especially when it comes to a business, you know, they always want to know that if they ever need to get their data out, they can, and just having it there is good.
And you can just export that data out as JSON and then dump it, you know, wherever you want.
Great.
And then we have this notion of everything in DocumentDB, every operation you do is charged with a request unit charge. Mm-hmm. It's a normalized kind of request unit charge. Similar to SQL DB's got a database transaction unit. We have something called a request unit. They're a similar kind of thing.
Okay. Right?
So that normalized charge accounts for CPU and disk IO and index lookups and all sorts of stuff that operation effectively cost the system to produce that. And you'll know that you buy DocumentDB, you get these like resource allocations.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what used to happen is we were on like a physical charging model. Basically, whatever it costs to execute that query, that's what we kind of returned. The problem was is that was spiky, right? And there
sure.
was no predictability to that at all. You know, you ran a query today, you got a RE charge of 10. You ran the query tomorrow, you got an RE charge of 400. You know, you run the query again, and you get an RDU charge of 1, and it's like, well, how do I do capacity planning on that?
Absolutely.
Right? So what we have now is we actually have an Azure machine learning algorithm that sits and looks at data, looks at different shaped JSON documents, looks at different query patterns, different workloads, and runs this ML kind of job that predicts what that's actually going to cost.
Okay.
And then we level that kind of cost out so that if you run a query today, and you get a charge of 1, and you run the same query tomorrow, you'll get a charge of 1. If you run the same query in a week's time, as long as the data underneath isn't changing, you'll get the same cost every time you run a query.
That's really cool. It's awesome that we're using ML to do the pricing prediction.
So we're using ML to kind of do some of this prediction and figure out based on historical what it's cost us to kind of serve that request.
Mm-hmm.
We're using ML to predict what that request will cost us in the future.
Super cool.
But the benefit for the customer is now it's just level, and now you can do capacity planning, and you can actually figure stuff out. So you get a better idea of what this thing will cost you at the end of the month. You know, it's not a surprise. Another big thing that we've added is geospatial support, and we'll have a look at that in the demo.
Awesome.
You know, we use GeoJSON, so again, we've taken the stance of aligning to a standard. So we've aligned to GeoJSON. And then we provide some cool system functionality on top of that, but it's fully indexed, and so we'll take a look at that.
Great.
And then this one is kind of an ongoing one, regional expansion. Depending on when the show airs, we've just announced Australia is now live in DocumentDB. Coming up next will be some of the other data centers that Azure is working on, and some other regions which... So we'll just keep kind of expanding. As we see a signal or as we hear a signal from the field that says, hey, I want Azure DocumentDB in this region, if it's not there yet, please let the product team know. You know, we then feed that into our kind of planning cycle, and we then light up new regions as we can.
So if you want DocumentDB somewhere it isn't, call Ryan at home.
That's it. Call me at home. My phone number is... and then, you know, kind of the last one that we're working on is this notion of upsert, right? So if I've got a document for you and I insert it, okay, if it's not there, insert the record. If it is there, just replace the record.
Right.
And this is a very important kind of feature for some of these IoT workloads that we're seeing on DocumentDB. So lots of customers of DocumentDB today run these IoT workloads.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these sensors that all they send is the delta. They don't actually send... you know, the full document, they just send the delta. So this notion of upsert is actually really, really important.
That makes sense.
So this upsert is by ID?
Yeah, so it'll be based on the ID of the document.
Okay.
So if a document exists with that ID and you're doing an upsert, it'll replace it. If the document doesn't exist, it'll create it.
Okay.
Right, so I'm tired of talking, and I'm sure everyone's tired of hearing me talk. So show me some stuff. All right, so this is the portal, and I have my DocumentDB account pinned to the home screen because that's what I work with all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our account blade, and the account blade has kind of got some metrics on it that you can kind of get an idea of your total request and your average request, and you can go in and customize those. The most important one on this is probably your keys, right? Because you need to get access to these keys all of the time.
Yep.
And you can regenerate your keys, so please regenerate your keys often, especially when it's me and I publish my key to GitHub all the time. When I publish samples, I always forget to exclude the config file, and I always publish my keys. So for me, I just got a standing job, you know, that comes in and recycles my key every day.
Now, are these keys what you'd actually use, though, from example, for from like a web application to talk to DocumentDB? Yeah. So you wouldn't want to recycle the key if it's actively in use?
No,
in
so what you do there is, so we've got the primary key and the secondary key, yep. right? So let's say your web application today is using the primary key. What you would actually do is you'd go to your web application in the Azure portal and you'd switch it to use the secondary key.
Okay.
Right? Then you'd recycle your primary key. Mm-hmm. And then the next time what you would do is you'd switch your web app back to use the primary key and you'd recycle your secondary key.
Okay.
So that's the purpose of having primary and secondary keys there.
Okay.
To give you this ability to do that key rotation
right.
and not take your app offline.
Okay. Makes sense.
So from here, what you want to be able to do is you can see over here, if I scroll down, I've got some databases. So I've already got a company's database and a SandPit database. If I want to go and create a new database, I can just hit the button, and give it a name. So let's call this one CloudCover. All right? Mm-hmm. And create that. The database is created. If I click on the database, you can actually get some metrics about that specific database, which mm-hmm. is really cool if you've got multiple. And you'll see there's no collections in this one yet. So I'm going to go now and I'm just going to go and add a collection. I'm going to call this called data, right? And you can see here's pricing tiers. So if I click on this pricing tier, these are the different pricing tiers that we have for a collection, right? Mm-hmm. So for $25 a month, you get 250 of those request units per second. For $100 a month, you get 2,500 of those request units per second.
Okay. Right?
And the nice thing about this is that if you want to scale your collection up or scale your collection down, or you want to you have a spiky workload where your app is really busy for 2 hours in the morning and then it's not busy for the rest of the day. Well, you can programmatically, or in the portal, you can programmatically scale up your collection for that 2 hour period to an S3.
Yep.
You know, pay the $100 per month for those 2 hours because we then divide and figure out what the hourly cost is.
Yep.
And then for the rest of the day, you can scale that collection down to something that's slower and then save yourself some money.
Very cool.
And that happens. As you need it.
Yeah, actually, I have a question on this request unit. Mm-hmm. How does that translate into like document read and write?
Okay, that's actually a very good question. And on our documentation page on the Azure portal, mm-hmm. we go into some detail explaining that. Right.
Okay.
It's a number that's built up. So like let's say for instance writing a record. You want to know how many writes can I do per second? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say to me, well, how many documents can I write per second? And I say to them, well, it depends on the document, right? Because if you give me a 1K JSON document, mm-hmm. that's really quick and really easy to write. If you give me a 512K JSON document that's got 15,000 index terms, that's a very, very different kind of story, right? So mm-hmm. we can't charge the same mm-hmm. for a 1K doc and a 512K doc.
Okay.
Right? So the cost that RU charge is actually depending on the operation you're doing, depending okay. on the query, depending on the results that come back.
Okay.
The nice thing, and I'll show you that just now, if I don't, when I'm in the query window, just remind me, mm-hmm. I'll show you every response to every operation comes back as a REST response. And in the header, there is an XMS charge header, and that charge will tell you how many request units that particular query cost you.
Oh, interesting.
And like I said, that's now that logical charging model. So if you execute that exact same request again, you should see that charge stays exactly the same.
Great. Mm-hmm.
So the nice thing is, you know, we've got some customers, we'll work on the portal and exposing that metric more. Mm-hmm. But we've got some customers where what they do is every single response they get back, they strip that charge out and dump it into a thing, and then they do analytics at the end of the month to see what was their max charge, what was their busy period of time, what was their, you know, which query cost you a lot?
Sure.
Because you may actually want to go in and optimize that query.
Makes sense.
You know? Mm-hmm. So if you suddenly see a query that's costing you, you know, 12,000 request units, well, that's a fairly expensive query. You
Absolutely.
May want to go and have a look at that and see, is there something you can do to optimize that query
Absolutely.
And bring it down?
But say during the insertion, when I add a new document, mm-hmm. I may also occur multiple request units, right? Based
yes.
on my index and document size.
Yeah. So
how do I get that information? How many request units I?
Again, as soon as the document's finished written, the response comes back to say
it's also in the
201 that comes back that says, yep, we've inserted the doc. In that header will be a charge.
Okay.
So you'll be able to see it straight away. Every operation
cool.
you do, you should be able to see a charge.
Okay.
So I'm just going to pick the default for now. And then this is the indexing policy. So We have three indexing policies out of the box that you can kind of pick and choose. The default one is a good one for kind of equality on strings, order by range. So it's kind of a nice mix. It has some the lower end of storage overhead, but gives you the most kind of application benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can start kind of changing. You can say, well, if I don't ever do order by and I don't ever do kind of range operations, all I'm doing is equality kind of lookups, and I want to save on space, well, then that one over there, the hash-based policy, oops. The hash-based policy will give you the lowest kind of storage overhead, but then less capability, right?
Okay.
And then the flip side of that is range. If you want to do, you know, order by on all your columns, and you want to do range operations in all your fields, then range is the best one. We'll give you the higher end of the storage thing, okay, but give you the most flexibility. So you can kind of pick and choose what you want.
And this is something you can change after you've created
absolutely.
Your collection.
So I'm gonna stick with the default, and then I'll show you how easy it is to change, right? So say, okay, there my collection's created, and I can go into the collection blade, and again, I can see some monitoring and metrics specifically for that collection.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to step up the performance now, so I'm on an S2, if I want to go to an S3, I just hit that, say go, and there you go, the collection's now an S3.
Okay, cool.
And I'm now paying the higher price for it. If I want to change the indexing policy, I can just go into it. So this is what the index policy looks like. So it's a JSON document. Mm-hmm. Surprise, we're a JSON database, so we do everything in JSON. And there's the index policy, right? So if you have a look, it's a path at the root, okay? The kind is a range index, the data type is a number. Here we do a hash index on strings, mm-hmm. right? So that gives you, that's what our default is. But I'll show you in a sec how to change them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess you can apply a policy to a specific JSON pass.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is just some properties I will apply to
absolutely.
The policy.
You know, that, so I'm just saying path root, but I could do something that looked like this. If I had, I knew I had a field called overview that had a subfield called description, mm-hmm. and I wanted to kind of apply a policy to just that path, I can do that. Right. So that's the include path. You'll see by default we also have, or in the indexing policy, we also have exclude paths. So exclude paths are the opposite, obviously. So remember that JSON document I showed you that had a shed load of kind of text?
Yes.
And I said you probably wouldn't want to index this because you're not gonna do query operations on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a good idea if your documents look like that, or you have these properties on them that you know you're never gonna query on.
Right.
Go and exclude them out of the index,
okay.
right? Because it'll save you on write operations. Your writes will now cost you less RUs.
Yep.
Okay, your queries will be cheaper. The storage in the index will be less, etc., etc. So, if you've got those kind of patterns, it really does help to kind of go and exclude some paths.
Sure.
So, if I wanted to kind of change to the higher one now, I can just go say change, apply, and my index policy is now changed.
Great.
Okay. And in the background, you'll see there's a metric that shows up over here somewhere. Sorry, if I go to cloud cover, there you can see that up to date. Okay, index transformation of this collection is up to date.
Okay. Right?
And now you'll see, obviously mine was instant because there's no data in that collection, but if there was 10 gig of data in that collection, this may actually show you, you know, 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 90%, it's done.
Great. Okay.
So we're good to go. All right. So. That's how easy it is to kind of create a database and a collection. We have cool things now, like in here, that you can actually do a document explorer. I don't have any documents in this database, but if I jumped into, say, my company's database, I will now start seeing some data records, and there is my JSON.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
And I can actually come into this, and I can change the value to something. Okay. And right here, I can actually just go and persist that record in my database. Okay, so I can edit my data in here, I can browse my data in here, I can go back to Cloud Cover and I can actually, you know, write some queries in here. So I can actually go do some things like select star from that. I don't know what my data looks like, but you can just go run a query and my results will come back.
Now, when you add or you update or you run the queries here, are we surfacing that RU information?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can see, like, you can test out a query, for example, and see this is what the RU cost will be?
So let me see if I can remember what my, not in Cloud Cover, but in my company's database, right? Let me see, I think I've got, let me go and, I don't know what my sample data looks like, I can't remember it offhand, so let me just do that, and on this small resolution, there's my company record back, Okay. Mm-hmm. And you can see I just did basically a select star from everything in that collection. That's probably a fairly expensive operation.
Sure.
So let's go and have a look. If you go to the bottom of this query window, there it is there, request charge.
Okay.
It's showing me one of 75 results. Okay, it's telling me there are more results. So even though it's only returned 75, there are more.
Mm-hmm.
So we dynamically fill up the page until the response is full, and then we send the response back to you. If there are more, we'll send you this has more results.
Okay.
So I can actually go next page, and there you go, and I get the next page. And if you come back, you'll see this charge. Oops, this charge has actually now changed because that's the next page, and I'm now showing you record 76 to 175.
Okay. Right,
so I'm paging my result set, and every time the result set comes back, the charge is different.
Sure.
But you say, hang on, you said every time you run this query, you know, you'll get the same cost. Mm-hmm. The cost is also dependent on the results that come back. So because these results are different every time,
okay,
the size of the documents are actually different, therefore the cost is changing. If I ran this query again and got the second page back, the second page will always cost me 176.09 as long as that second page stays the same.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
But you were saying that the logical billing is smoothing all those out.
Yeah.
Right? From the
so it's smoothing out those kind of spikes and gives the customer the ability to kind of do a capacity plan to say, hey, you know, I know I've got, this is what my documents look like. I know I'm going to do X number of these kind of queries. I'm going to do so many kinds of writes. I'm going to do so many of these. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to use a calculator, a DocumentDB pricing calculator, to go and figure out an estimate of what your bill is actually going to be per month.
Great.
Right? So it's not a surprise. You don't suddenly go, ooh, hang on, what happened there? All right, so that's kind of a simple thing there. I want to show you our data migration tool. Okay, it's an EXE that looks like this. There's also a command line version, so you can code it and script it and schedule it.
Great.
But you know, I want to show you the good. So I want to go, you can actually import from a number of different sources. So you can import from Mongo, you can import from Azure Tables, CSVs, SQL. There's a bunch of other ones we're working on. This tool's also open source, so we've had community contributions.
Oh, great.
So if I was running that version, you'd actually see some other community contributions in there. So if there's a source in here that you want to import data from that we don't have, feel free to go to GitHub. Check this thing out. Go and add the source, and send us a PR, and we'll happily accept.
So I see in the in the source you also have DocumentDB.
Yeah.
Is that to transfer data from one region to another?
Yeah. So it's to move from one region to another region, or to move from a production environment to a dev environment, or you know whatever you want to be able to do.
Okay.
So I'm just going to import some JSON files. I'm going to add a folder. So if I go to some data that I've got, I'm just going to say that's the folder I want to import. Okay, the connection string, so let's just jump back to the portal quickly. And you'll see, you'll grab the connection string. And the connection string is just a combination of that account key, or the account endpoint and the key.
Mm-hmm.
So if I come in here and I paste, oops, and I paste that in there. I also want to tell it what database to kind of insert into. So the database I called was CloudCover, okay? And the collection I want to insert into is called data. So now, I can have it insert into multiple collections, so I can actually have this tool fan out my import. So if I had five collections and I wanted to spread my data across those five, because it's 50 gig worth of data, for instance, I can actually add five collections in here and the tool will then evenly distribute that.
Okay, great.
I can go do things like setting what my partitioning key is if I'm going to fan out, that kind of stuff. I'm going to map inside the JSON documents, there is an ID field, and I want to actually tell our system to use that ID field.
Okay.
So if you had something potentially called like, you know, customer ID in your document and you wanted to map that to our ID field, then put that in there.
Great. Right?
So I'm just going to do ID.
So I guess when you import, all the operations are upsets, right? If I import the same data set again, we'll just update it.
Today it's insert only, but we will be, we'll probably be making a change to this to kind of allow you under advanced options to say whether you want an upsert or not.
Right? I see.
So if I go next, I can pick an error log file if I wanted to. And here's this kind of, if I go view the command. So if I wanted to kind of schedule this to run every hour or every day, there's the command with all its kind of argument switches. So copy this and then save that into your schedule.
Right? Cool.
So if I go along now and say import, and hopefully I got it all right. I didn't. Okay, I think I'm using an old version of this tool on this machine. So I didn't get it all right. I'm using an old version of the tool, so there was a bit of a mismatch. But if I come into the Document Explorer, I can actually come in here, and I can add some documents in here as well. So I can go here, and I can kind of select up to 100 JSON documents. So in the portal, I can go and do the same thing. So let's go and do, I had some movies and cinemas that I wanted to kind of do. So let me import the 7 cinema files that I have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just go and say upload straight in the portal. There you go. They're in, seven,
easy
seven
enough.
Records done, right? And if you're going to have a look at them, there's my cinema record.
Okay.
And that's sort of what my cinema record looks like.
Great.
Now, one of the cool things that I wanted to show you is notice that my cinemas have location information in them, right? So I want to be able to go and say, hey, I want to go to a movie after this, and I don't want to go very far, so find me a cinema within, you know, 2 miles, because that's as far as I want to walk. That's the geolocation sort of capability, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, I need to just go back to my collection quickly, and can anyone guess what I'm about to do?
Change the policy?
Yep. I'm about to change the indexing policy to support geolocation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I go to that, and I look at, wait for the portal to load, come here to my indexing policy, okay? And you see there I've got indexes kind and range, right? So I'm going to take one of those because I don't feel like typing the whole thing.
Sure.
And I'm just going to paste it in here, right? So now what I'm going to go do is I'm going to go change this to spatial, and I'm going to change this to point, which is my type, and I don't need that. Cool. It's valid JSON, and I'm going to go say save. And effectively what I've done now is I've added geospatial at the root. And as soon as we find that GeoJSON kind of fragment, because GeoJSON is a specific fragment,
right.
As soon as we find that, we'll index it with geospatial kind of capability.
Great.
Now that I've done that, I can go do cool queries that look like this. So I'm going to go and do something, and I'm just going to copy this so that I get the coordinates right. So those coordinates that you see over here, those coordinates there are where we're actually standing right now. That's this building, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I want to say, get me cinemas. Okay, within a 2 mile radius, and I'm multiplying by 1,600 because GeoJSON is meters.
Okay.
So to get me within 2 miles, I'm going to run this query and I'm going to get 2 results. So I can see that Regal Crossroads and IPIC Redmond are within 2 miles of here.
Right? Sounds about right.
Sounds about right. And just to kind of show you the other capability, so that's the SD distance function, okay? The other function we have is this one, which is kind of cool. This one says, I want to find things within a particular polygon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went off to to Bing Maps, okay? And I said to Bing Maps, can I please have the polygon of Redmond only, okay? So run that, and that's the polygon of the city of Redmond. Those are the coordinates, okay, roughly. And I want to say, I want to see all movies and cinemas within that polygon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if I run this now, I should get just 1 cinema. I get back 1 cinema. Well, actually 2 cinemas. Apparently Regal Bella Bottega is within the
It is
in Redmond,
yeah.
And so is IPIC Redmond, right? So, you know, that's what's happening there. And you'll see that, remember I imported 7 cinemas, so it's actually excluded 5 because they're in Seattle and Bellevue and somewhere else.
Yeah. No, geo stuff's really very cool.
So that's the geo stuff, which is pretty cool. The other thing that I wanted to kind of show you was the difference in the routing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So typically what we would do before is, if you have a look, there's a simple little application that connects to my document client.
Mm-hmm.
And all I want to go and do is I want to go and select the documents from my database, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the method asks for a collection link, okay? Now the collection link you actually get from a collection. Well, I don't know what that collection link is, right? Because I know what the collection's ID is, but I don't know what its collection link is.
Sure.
Right? And if you're going to have a look, like this is DocumentDB Studio that we have, which is a cool little tool that you can go and get off GitHub as well. It's also open source, so you can go and contribute to it if you want. So if I go and have a look at that collection I just created, you see that ID over there? That's the ID it's actually asking for.
Okay.
Now, there's no way anyone's going to remember what that thing is.
Sure.
Right? So the only way that developers have been able to do this is you typically then go and run a function called get collection dot self-link, right? So my get collection method over here, so it takes an ID, right? So I called it, what did I call it? Data. So if I go and do this, All right, so I pass in the ID, and I want this thing to go and get me a collection, mm-hmm. right? Now, guess what? When I go and query for a collection, the collection wants a database link. And the database link is the same thing. So if I go and have a look at Cloud Cover here, the database link is a link. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to know what that is either.
Sure.
Right? So guess what you have to go and do?
You're going to have
to go write another method that says, go and get database, right? And you can see that this kind of starts becoming painful, because now in order to query for my data or insert a document or replace a document, mm-hmm. I first got to go and figure out these objects to kind of get a reference to these objects to go and work with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pain.
Sure.
Right? Wouldn't it have been so much better to be able to kind of do something that looked like this? Okay. And instead of going and querying for something, I now just want to say, hey, my collection is in this place. Okay. And you see I'm still typing up a URL. Mm-hmm. The difference to this URL is that it's composed of things that I know about.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I know my collection's called, or my database is called that, and I know my collection is called that.
Sure.
So now I can go run this query, you know, because it's just the URL, but instead of filled with those hashed resource IDs, it's now filled with human readable IDs.
Right.
All right, and that saves, in this silly example, that saves two extra queries to your database to get back objects that you didn't actually need, because all you wanted was your documents.
Clearly a lot easier.
Now, it's saving my request units.
It's saving your request units, yeah. Absolutely. So that is still, you still need to understand our resource model. I mean, it's not that hard. It's databases have collections, have documents, right? Mm-hmm. But you still gotta remember that. What happens if all you know is, you know, Cloud Cover and data, right? And you kind of forget what that looks like. So we have another helper method over here. You'll see this one takes in a string, but there's another one that takes in a URI, and we have this cool new URI factory that you can go and say, well, create the collection URI,
mm-hmm.
right? And all this one does is it takes in the two strings,
great.
Right? So all you have to worry about is passing in those two variables, Cloud Cover and data, and we'll produce the correct URI for you. We'll make sure it's encoded, we'll make sure it's the right case, we'll make sure that, you know, all of that kind of stuff is done as it should be done. You don't mm-hmm. have to worry about doing that.
Mm-hmm. Very
so
cool.
You can type in the string, or you can use these URI, you know, factories to go and do the work for you.
Nice.
And that just cuts down all your code, you know, cuts down unnecessary RUs and queries and that kind of stuff. So this, I think, you know, this feature, we're planning lots more kind of improvements from a developer point of view in the SDKs. But this feature is probably one of the most asked for by developers. And I'm very happy that it's actually there.
Well, certainly, you know, appears to make things a lot easier.
Yeah, much, much easier. So that's pretty much that. Let's just jump back to the slides and kind of wrap up.
Sure.
So that was a few quick little demos. So, you know, where to next? Where are we going next with this product?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and if you ask me and if you ask anyone else in the team, we all have ideas about where this product should go.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's not really up to us, okay? Mm-hmm. It's up to the customers.
Mm-hmm.
It really is up to customers. You know, and I don't just say that kind of flippantly. I really do mean it. You know, if you go to the DocumentDB user voice, log the things there, comment there, vote for them there, every single member of the program management team, myself included, we look at those things, we respond to them. Sometimes we don't respond to them as quickly as people want, because we're actually building features.
Sure.
But we look at every single one of them. We read every single comment, and we make sure that, you know, as soon as there's status to be kind of changed, we go and update the status and we change the status.
Great.
And if you're going to go use user voice, I actually appeal to people, you know, don't just vote as an anonymous user. Because one of the other things that we do is, let's say you asked for auto buy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you asked for feature XYZ.
Geo replication, yes.
Right? So we'll log in to user voice, and while we're busy designing geo replication, we'll reach out to everybody who voted on that to say, hey, do you want to have a quick call with the product team? Just to sit down, make sure that we understand what your requirements are. This is what we're kind of planning. You know, does it work in your environment? That kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it's not just a, hey, go and ask for stuff. It's actual, we want it to be an interactive forum.
Sure. So, which is great, which is very nice to see.
Yeah. And you can always reach out to us on or follow us on Twitter as well. We tweet about service updates. We tweet about cool things that people are doing in the community.
Okay.
You know, we've just recently had a guy build us a Ruby SDK. You know, we've had someone else build us a Go SDK. There's a PHP SDK in the works. Those
Perfect.
Are all community driven. You know, so it's not
awesome.
From the product team, but you know, we'll gladly kind of tweet those things out. So if you're doing something cool in the community with DocumentDB, mm-hmm. let us know. We'll
Great.
Gladly spread the word.
Very cool.
And then, you know, just a couple of quick kind of resources for everybody. SDKs, if you want to know about the SDKs, go to DocDB SDKs. Portal.azure.com is the good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you wanted the DocDB Studio that I was running,
yep.
the standalone Windows tool, go to DocDB Studio.
Great.
And then lastly, there's this Query Playground. So let me show you the Query Playground pretty quickly because I haven't shown you that yet. But I actually think the Query Playground is pretty awesome. So this Query Playground that we have is a sandbox environment. We've loaded it up with a data set, which is actually all the food items in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually go and see the food items. You can run in here, and there's some simple kind of steps that you can run through over there. We guide you through it. You can run this query, see the results. Okay, there's some results.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and change that query if you want. You can play around, you know, change what you want, run it again, you know. So you can actually do that. There's a couple of like lessons. If you want to know about how to filter things, if you want to know about ins and betweens, there's ins and betweens. If you want to know about order by, there's order by. If you want to know UDFs, joins, built-in functions, all that kind of stuff, it's all there.
Seems like a perfect place to go and you know, learn about the different
You don't need an Azure account. You don't need data, anything. If you just want to learn about the query syntax or if you're stuck and you kind of want to just go write a query and see, have you got the syntax right or not? That's a good kind of place to go.
Very awesome.
There's some geospatial in there as well. So
it even involves the map here.
Yeah. So this one actually involves the map. So we use the Bing API map in this case, which extends my little query example. This one says we've loaded it up with all volcanoes. So this one says find me volcanoes within 100 kilometers of me. And I run that.
Oh God, there's one right there. We got to go.
There's a volcano right within 100 kilometers of us. It turns out it's Mount Rainier.
Oh, of course.
You know, if I wanted to do something with all volcanoes in the state of Washington, I can go do that, and there's a lot more volcanoes
scary,
in the
yeah.
state of Washington.
There you go.
They're actually pretty scary. So California can have their earthquakes, we'll have our volcanoes.
Apparently.
But apparently we have earthquakes as well.
I've heard, yes.
So this is a good kind of place to go play around. And another good resource for people is this query cheat sheet, right? So our query syntax is very, very familiar to SQL. We base it on SQL language. But because it's JSON, there's a couple of subtle differences here and there.
Right.
You know, we don't have the luxury of being bound to a schema. So there's a couple of little differences here and there. So if you want to know how to do basic queries and interjoins and UDFs and what operators we support and the different kinds of sample queries, you can download this cool PDF, print it out, stick it up on your cubicle, or use it as a mouse pad or whatever you want to
do. Go put it on my refrigerator at home.
Go put it on your refrigerator at home and look at it every day. And be ashamed that you're not using DocumentDB.
And we'll make sure we have links to all this stuff right beneath the video.
And then, you know, just to kind of finish that wrapping up, and then we're done, is, you know, so that was the Query Playground. If you want to get started, go to DocumentDB Starter, and then the link to the query import or that data import tool that I used was DocDB Import.
Perfect. And now, do you have a Twitter handle in case people want to reach out to you?
Yeah, I do. It's at Ryan Crockle.
At Ryan Crockle. Perfect. Well, Ryan, thanks for coming on and showing us what's new with DocumentDB.
Pleasure, guys.
I'm excited to use some of the new features myself.
Let's hope it's not going to be a year before I'm back.
I agree. Well, you know, if you keep adding features, you know, maybe it will be. We'll see.
Right.
Everybody out there, thanks for watching us. Make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.